Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Nat Stoddard, author of The Right Leader, Selecting Executives Who Fit. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Nat Stoddard, author of The Right Leader, Selecting Executives Who Fit. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag posts found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Nat Stoddard, chairman of Crenshaw Associates, shares with us his insights on how to improve the contemporary executive selection process, thereby maximizing the success potential of incoming and ascending organizational leaders. And so now, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Nat Stoddard, author of The Right Leader, Selecting Executives Who Fit, and chairman of Crenshaw Associates, a New York-based consulting firm that specializes in career and transition management for senior executives. Nat is the former CEO of World Kitchen, a leading kitchen products manufacturer, and chairman, president, and CEO of GE's Canadian appliance affiliate, Camco Incorporated. Nat, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nat, before we start out, I also wanted to thank you for your service to our country, because I know you are a pilot in the Air Force, and I wanted to recognize that and thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Nathan, and back to you as a former submariner.
Thank you. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time in the service and got a lot out of it that I know I've been able to apply in my professional life, and I know, of course, from reading your book that you've done the same, and I'm looking forward to touching on those points in a little bit.
Great.
Well, Nat, to set the stage for our listeners, you know, I was hoping you could briefly share with us why it's important to pick the right leader. I think we see that in the news today, maybe the converse of picking the right leader and some of the devastation that can actually happen in picking the wrong leader. So I was just hoping that you might be able to kick us off with kind of that backdrop to have our audience appreciate the value in leader selection.
Well, the easiest way for me to do that would be to actually stand on the shoulders of giants and people who have gone before me in terms of underscoring the importance of this. And I don't think there's anybody who did a better job than Jim Collins in his research of Good to Great. Of the six attributes he identified in there, the first two, the level five leadership and then getting the right people on the bus, the first two, then what? Both of those come first. They both have to do with getting the right people in the right chairs at the right time, getting leaders with that professional will and paradoxical, their professional will and paradoxically their personal humility.
Mm-hmm.
And the conclusion of that research is pretty clear to business leaders of all sizes of companies, and that is that, without the right leaders in place first and foremost, the best you're going to be able to do is get good, and good
yes.
just isn't good enough. So on the first half of the question, what's the importance of having the right leaders in place? The answer is it's the only way you are going to not only survive but actually thrive, especially in the markets that we see today and what will be emerging after this recession. The other side of the coin is, what's the price of having the wrong leader? In our book, The Right Leader, we have spent some time to identify, which is a difficult, a lot of moving parts, but a difficult calculation. However, it's pretty clear that today 64% of newly appointed CEOs are never going to reach their fourth anniversary, and 40% fail within the first 18 months.
Wow.
The rate of failure is 50% higher in the last 4 years than it was when we came into this new millennium, and then it was really three times what it had been in the 1990s. So we have a huge failure rate today that's been established fairly clearly, and we have a very, very high cost associated with it. We estimate that small cap companies will pay at the 18-month point $12.5 million of cash to change their CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-cap, around $22 million, and large-cap, $4.5 billion and up companies, they're in excess of $50 million. And in total, this costs U.S. Economy and industry over $14 billion a year.
Wow. That's
costs
just impressive.
Are huge.
And, yeah.
And Nathan, those don't even include the lost market cap cost to shareholders, the increased volatility that comes when a change at the top occurs with a company stock, and perhaps I think the biggest price, which is paid by all of the employees, the organization, which is usually left stalled in the water. It has lower morale, higher turnover, and probably most difficult to recover from is the loss of trust.
Yeah, I think back to my service days, because at my first change of command, my XO told all of us, and I remember it clearly because we were sitting in the wardroom when he did so. He said there will never be a more traumatic experience in an organization than when its senior leader changes out.
Absolutely.
And it certainly was a very big shift for us organizationally, just on my submarine, and we only had 100-some people. And it's been that way every organization I've been in where the CEO has turned over.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. Well,
exactly. And that's what we miss so often in the importance of making these changes and why there's so much turnover and failure at the top of U.S. business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, Nat, following that discussion in The Right Leader, you present a new executive selection model that you call the Match Fit model that expands on the traditional executive selection model. I was hoping you could briefly describe for us each model and why the new Match Fit model is needed.
I'll give it a shot. You can help me out with some other questions if I miss the point. But
Let's
start back at World War II when the U.S. economy was just really starting to put itself into gear, and industrialization as we know it for the last several decades came on the scene. And it was at that time that the traditional model, the selection process for selecting our leaders, came about. And it was in an environment when jobs were plentiful and were growing and people with talents and education were scarce.
Okay.
The mantra would have been, get me a warm body to fill this job. Get me somebody who can do this job. I'll teach them how if need be, but get me somebody who can do this job. And it was in that vein that the processes that we use for selecting lower level people, middle level people, transferred into the higher level people, where there is virtually a complete focus on ability.
Okay.
Get me somebody who's got the skills, who's got the knowledge, who's got the aptitude, the intellect. Get me somebody who's been successful elsewhere, because that proves that they know how to do these things. And then let's get them into this job where we need them. And it sounds rational.
Sure, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not what is the great determinant of success or failure for leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the evidence, the high failure rate, the 64% don't make 4 years, 40% are gone 18 months.
Yeah.
Those numbers by themselves say that there's something wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And what's wrong from the work that we've done and the company that I'm chairman of, Crenshaw Associates, we've been working on this and researching it for a number of years, and have presented it in the book, is that this focus on abilities is so pervasive that it doesn't pay attention with the same degree of rigor, the same degree focus on what really does make a difference, and that is the character of the individual.
Okay.
And the culture of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, you know, people know they're there. People know that there's more than just ability and personality when you select somebody, but they don't look at them with the same degree of rigor. For one thing, they're softer. For one thing, they are more difficult to measure. So we kind of shy away from even trying to do it. And that's really where we get ourselves into a lot of trouble.
Okay.
The match fit model takes and breaks it out. We say, look, simply put, the individual brings three things to the party here. We bring abilities and our personality and energy, and we also bring our character. And most importantly for us there is the values, the beliefs, and the business philosophies of the individual. And companies.
Mm-hmm.
Companies. Okay, now if we look at that individual and those three traits as a peg, that's the proverbial peg we want to put into the hole.
Sure. Yeah.
The hole of the company.
Okay.
That hole is made up of more than just the needs that the individual is supposed to be able to deliver and address. It's also made up and shaped by, to a large extent, by the cultures of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So the traditional model, what it's doing is it's looking at the shape of the peg and saying, get me the right shaped leader, give me the right traits, give me all this business about the what the, give me a successful leader from that triangular shaped hole.
Yes, yes.
But we haven't even looked at what is the true shape of the hole we want to put it into.
Okay.
But doesn't it make sense that you'd want to really understand what is the shape of this hole, be it irregular or octagonal, before we try and take a square-shaped peg and jam it into it?
That makes a lot of sense. Sure, sure.
That's exactly what, in a very simplistic way, what we're trying to do is to make sure people realize, everyone in the hiring process, that the shape of the peg will only fit particularly shaped holes. So if you don't know what the real needs are of the company, and you don't know what the cultures are and how strong they are and how they can shape a given assignment for a division president or for a small corporation, all the more important, or even the mid-sized and large corporations, that the key elements of success are going to be missed.
Well, Nat, on that line in talking about corporate need, there was something that I found really striking in The Right Leader. And that was your discussion of the need for the hiring organization to define the actions to be taken by the incoming executive rather than just the results to be achieved. I was wondering, could you explain why that's important?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I want to thank you, Nathan, for actually reading the book. It's great to have a conversation with somebody who can ask good questions. And you're absolutely right. It is one of those funny things that we realized in the needs area that most of the job descriptions, position specs, call them what you may, for a new senior position, say things like the incumbent will return the company to profitability, or will grow sales at better than industry rates, or will increase share and reestablish our brand franchise. And all of these are laudable and appropriate and proper goals. But the problem is that they don't say how these goals are to be achieved. And there are very different ways to achieve them. So you can end up with, let's take the return on return to company to profitability.
Yeah,
that can be done by aggressive cost cutting and downsizing and restructuring. And in the case of a turnaround, a lot of wet work, as they say. You need somebody in there who has been there, done that, is able to lead in that kind of a tangible mindset.
Yes.
Another way to return a company to profitability is, and I would suggest starting out on your website and within these podcasts, is through better strategy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay? Now, one takes more time and more focus. One takes a different set of skills and orientation than another. And if you're not specific going in on what the leader needs to be able to do, how do you find the right leader? You don't. You end up with really capable people with different backgrounds, but not necessarily what needs to be done. So you run the risk of people coming in and repeating what they did before, which may be the wrong thing, or changing things that don't need to be changed and should be left alone. So it's interesting that, as a sidebar to that, that so many of the job descriptions are written by people who have never done the jobs here.
Yes.
You know, the CEO is being replaced. Who writes the job description? The head of HR and the lead director or the chairman, who may or may not have ever done that job in this company. The people who have the best knowledge about the actions to be taken, rather than just the outcomes that are desired, are the people who will report to that leader, but who rarely, if ever, get asked in a way that they can answer the question.
Okay. I can see that. I can see that. It, you know, from that perspective, it helps create some clarity. I work with a lot of different organizations and often those trying to improve themselves. And so often their solution is to bring in a leader who came from a successful organization, but they don't necessarily have the skills to be able to execute the actions needed at their new organization to help them improve. Yeah,
and because you know, because those leaders have been winners elsewhere and are successful, they're going to come in, and not only might they misread more likely they will, the culture and how to do things, but the what to do's, the needs they're going to address, they are going to go to their kit bag of what worked for them last.
Yes.
And Marshall Goldsmith, a friend of ours who's written a best-selling book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, really nails it. Right in the title, where, you know, the things that made you qualified to do this job or to get this job are not the things that you need to have going for you in the job. And that's where a broader understanding of what needs to be done, alignment with the owners or alignment with the founder or alignment with the board, whomever the leader's boss may be, is absolutely essential for success starting on day one.
Okay. Nat, I want to just ask a little different question then, because it's one that I get asked and I see organizations struggle with. In your book, you stated that the importance of selecting new leaders whose values approximate those of the cultures in which they are embedded is critical because it is the fastest, most assured way to create organizational trust in a leader. The question I get asked frequently is, we need to change the culture of our organization. And so here we have an organization, they've identified a culture change need. Shouldn't they be bringing a leader in that then is aligned with the new desired culture, and then how does that affect their ability to gain trust within the existing organization?
That's a great question of an existing paradox is what makes leaders great. The best way I can frame this up for us quickly would be to go back to Peter Drucker. A couple of decades ago, his I think he was the first one I found who was crystal clear about the fact that the alignment of the character, the values and beliefs of the leader, must be close to, it doesn't have to be spot on, but must be close to those of the organization. In other words, the values and beliefs found in the culture of the people who are there for the people to trust the leader.
Okay.
Without trust, there is no will to follow. And without followership, leaders fail. And that really, in a nutshell, is what this alignment and fit, as we call it, the fit of the leader's character with a culture is all about. So your question is spot on. How do you get somebody who can come in who the people will follow if the journey that they need to be going on is different from what they are today?
Yes.
And that is exactly why some really talented, capable, on paper leaders don't get the job done. They either try to impose their will on the organization too fast, or they have too much of the DNA of the organization. This is the way we've always done things. They're internal candidates. They are inbred to the point that they have lost sight of reality. You know, they've places in Michigan, I think we can all see in the headlines today,
yes,
where some organizations are so insular that this is our way of doing it, and we lose sight of what's really the requirements for competitive success. The culture, Nathan, is organic.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay.
It grows. It evolves. And so is character, just like brands.
Mm-hmm.
They evolve and they morph and they grow. They do not respond well to being ham-fisted and jerked around.
Okay.
As I heard somebody say one time, they don't help a plant to grow by pulling on its stalk.
Mm-hmm.
And culture is the same way. Most people who are given the assignment to come in and change the culture are not given the realistic time that it takes to shape that living entity, to build the trust, and then to lead the people to the new shape.
Okay.
Therein lies the problem. And I found something, and I think you'd get a kick out of the source, that
mm-hmm.
really nailed it while we're doing the research. The National Defense University, an essay on strategic leadership and decision-making,
uh-huh.
put it this way, and let me just read this one sentence, or a couple sentences to you. They said that
okay.
many leaders, when trying to implement new strategies or a strategic plan leading to a new vision, will discover that their strategies will fail if they are inconsistent with the organization's culture. A
okay.
CEO, political appointee, or a flag officer who comes into an organization prepared to shake the place up and institute sweeping changes often experiences resistance to change and failure. And that's exactly right.
Okay.
You have to have a leader who can inspire trust by virtue of being one of us, of having trustworthy values and beliefs, things that we can connect with as followers.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the vision and the ability to lead people to a different way of collectively doing things. That is the real leader's job.
Okay. So we fundamentally first have to establish the trust, and
exactly.
then we lead to the new culture, the new vision.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Exactly. And how many times have you seen that where you understand that you question whether this person is really in this for themselves or are they in this for the collective good? Is this person's
mm-hmm.
is this person's agenda the same as ours? Can I trust this person when the chips are down to really make the right decision, and right being determined by the way this organization has committed itself over the years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually I'm accustomed to seeing the bull in a china shop.
Yep.
The guy who's coming in and going to change things up right now.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
And could you give me a list of the bulls that that don't end up on the floor of the arena when the matadors are done with them?
Oh, yes.
There's not many.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to come up and think of somebody who came in and did that and won big.
Right.
I can't.
No, usually they're there. They're there for a couple of years. Maybe it's by force of will. They got a couple of quarters that were good on the books, and then they're out,
mm-hmm.
and the organization's
yeah.
left in shambles.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, this is where you drew the correlation back to your time in the Air Force. You used or presented a tool, I'll call it, for executive selection called
mm-hmm.
a Forward Assessment Consultants, and they help the executive team, the organization, develop products such as the team topography assessment, the business terrain assessment, mapping the corporate lay of the land, and the field guide of vital information, all to help with the selection process.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could give us some background on what Forward Assessment Consultants are, and then just broadly, I know there's a lot of products, but just kind of broadly, what the collection of these products then do to support the executive selection process?
Sure, exactly. The term Forward Assessment Consultants was a little bit of a play on the forward air controllers
mm-hmm.
who were so instrumental in the war in Southeast Asia to help the fighter aircraft, these high-powered, fast-moving if you will, corporate CEOs, guys who could, and you know, so in those days it was all guys, but could come in and make a significant change in the outcome of what was going on in the company's endeavors on the ground. And that's really a strong metaphor, a parallel for what needs to be done, is that before we could even get people into the fray, we had to get them to the target area. You have to get them into the right target. And the best way to do that is while they're being selected, while the search for the right leader is underway, is to have people who are trained and knowledgeable of the area to take a look at the company, to take a look at the needs, to define and measure the culture, and then be able to say to the leader who is selected against those facts, here is the target. Here, hit my smoke. Go in and go after these things first. These actions are necessary, and the pieces that we have broken out in the consulting area that needs to be done, and we call them by related names pertaining to charts and graphs and things like that. But the truth is, the business terrain research is a way of looking critically through the eyes of the leaders who are already in place. Through in-depth interviews conducted by a third party, so there's no fear of reprisal or criticism, and they can speak their minds and not just play back the politically correct version of what should be done here.
Yes.
What is right and wrong about the vision and mission, the strategy, our success factors? What would a new CEO, is there coming into this situation, do for early wins? Insights into the way things get done, in other words, the culture, and important views of the bench strength and the human capital, the goods and the bads. And these are very sensitive, but believe me, the people who are there have a stake in the outcome. These folks know the answers by and large, and they want a chance to express their views and to set the stage to help the new leader to become successful. So that is critical input, and it leads to another piece of the research, which we call mapping the corporate lay of the land, which is to do it. We do it through an on-based questionnaire survey of the executional and directional needs, as well as of the culture and subcultures within the organization. And this is work that Crenshaw Associates has been doing for several years now.
Sure.
But it takes that qualitative information we get from the initial interviews and helps us to quantify it and compare it to see how consistent is it by functions and geography, by gender, by tenure, by supervisory level. And we can slice this and dice this in different ways so that the new leader can, through the eyes and the help of the forward assessment consultants, get a very clear picture about what needs to be done, where, and when.
Okay.
Those are the two key pieces. Another one is the team topography, which is an assessment. I mean, when you go into any new situation as a leader, the first thing you got to do is get the right people in the bus, as Colin says.
And
what do you have to work with? And how do you know? You know, this work can be done, an individual assessment and a team assessment. We do it through the use of psychologists and psychiatrists who specialize in organizational dynamics, and it's done in advance. So we don't have to waste the time when a new leader gets there to figure out what needs to be done. The figuring out part is done. Now let's let them do what they're so good at, which is to deal with it.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, as I read about these tools, you know, it struck me that these would be great tools even just to do periodically for the purposes of strategic planning. Ooh. Because they've just framed so well what the organization is doing today, how it fits in the marketplace, what needs to be done. Like I said, I thought they were a phenomenal resource even just for folks wanting to do some strategic planning.
You know, it's kind of funny how strategic planners and in almost every other area of our business mindset, you know, we turn to facts.
Yes.
What's the data? What do the numbers say? Let's reserve our gut feel until we have looked at the facts as they stand, and then we'll apply our judgment. In this area of selecting leaders, that's not the case. It is called that soft stuff, and it's been fascinating to us how the over the years the lack of rigor in this area that of culture, of understanding an individual's character, of really looking at it through the eyes of the mantra that brought us Six Sigma, that brought us lean manufacturing, that brought us continuous improvement, that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. That mindset somehow has magically escaped to this point the importance of applying it to the nature of our cultures. And that's baloney.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what the book is about. It's time to bring culture forefront, deal with it as we do any other business process, understand it, measure it, and then put it to good use in hiring leaders and providing them with the tools to actually go about making change and managing it for future success.
Certainly. And then I wanted to ask, I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking about the cost benefit of doing this kind of executive selection, and in that bringing in very senior, very experienced consultants to help them with the process has of course a cost associated with it. Do you see a size or a size range for small to medium businesses or maybe a business unit of a very large company that is the threshold point where they could see a reasonable cost benefit from employing the forward assessment consultants and the like in their selection processes?
Well, actually, I'm sure that there must be one on the downside that the evolution of organizations, a $4 or $5 million company in revenues or a $50 million or a $100 million business. Each one of them has different resources and different needs and capabilities. But at some point, whether you justify the investment in this process as a low cost risk management insurance policy.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nathan, if you hire the wrong CEO, it's going to cost you as a small cap company $12 million in 18 months.
Okay.
Or you can pay us X today. We don't need to be nuclear rocket scientists or nuclear submariners to figure that one out. That's pretty clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If it's, let's say you have the right person, and let's say you bring in a company like Crenshaw to help you to really understand the cultures and the needs and focus this individual, and it turns out that the person you got is spot on. Wow, what did we pay that money for? We didn't need to pay that. Well, the truth is there's still a payback.
Oh,
because,
certainly.
Because, Michael Watkins in the first 90 days talks about it takes 6 months for a CEO to come up to is a net positive contribution.
Okay.
And the reason for that is in the first 6 months, in the traditional way of approaching things, the person spends most of their time doing what they're not particularly good at, which is assessing people, assessing the culture, prioritizing needs, and doing those kinds of things.
Sure.
If those things are all done as a part of the pre-work, the forward assessment consulting work, that individual can start to contribute on day one correctly and accurately. And, boy, let me tell you, having been a journeyman CEO for a number of years, don't I wish I had that information on the day I came into a job. It would give you so much more confidence to move quickly. So even there is a payback. Now, besides the company, the good news for the smaller companies is that the cultures are generally more homogeneous in the smaller the size of the operation. So the costs of doing this work are less than they are for the large corporation with multiple divisions and spread out all over the world. And you can also, the nice thing, as you said, use this data, facts, for other applications, and because cultures change slowly, the data has much longer shelf life than in some other areas of the business, where in 90 days, the data you had before is no longer good. You need a market appraisal or update. This data can be used for numerous hirings and numerous strategic purposes as well. So, it's a tangible payback, regardless of whether you look at it as a protection for an insurance policy against risk aversion, or if you look at it as a short-term payback for a new hire.
Sure, and I think it's important, and I know I often stress with my clients that they look at all the benefits they're getting and assign those costs across that broad range and not look at it as just a singular cost for this one activity of this one executive selection.
So absolutely.
Yeah. Nat, before we close, I did want to ask you one more question, and that was about your website, because you have a companion site for the book, and that would be at www.therightleader.com that provides a lot of other additional resources, and I know our readers can go and register, and you have a video on the website that you talk more about forward assessment consulting and the like. Could you tell us a bit about all the resources that are on The Right Leader?
Well, all the resources that are there today are just the beginning, and any good website like yours, has got to be dynamic and changing. So we started out with the description of the book and the backgrounds of Claire and myself, who collaborated with me on this book and made a big difference in the process. We have copies of reviews and other information, all of which will help to keep the reader up to date with what we're doing and the direction that this book is going. And as a matter of fact, we just put up a headline last week when we learned that the Right Leader showed up as the 10th best-selling business book on the in its first month of the What Corporate America is Reading bestseller list. So we're
correct.
We're kind of
going to
toot our horn. Thank you. We're going to toot our horn wherever we get the chance. But for the people who come there, there's two really key things. One is the video, which is in place and will help people to get a better sense of what mapping the corporate lay of the land piece of the forward assessment consulting business is about.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is in the book, we focus on a case study to help people to see how we could examine, in the case of the book, James is the candidate and the SDI Corporation is the company, and we give information and show results of our mapping work and of the interviews. But on the website, we are just about to introduce some interactive information that will allow the individuals to get more insight, to make a judgment themselves using these tools as to whether they would offer James the job or not, and then see how their answers fare against everybody else who's visited the site and voted as to whether they would make an offer, extend an offer, or not to this individual based on the information. So it's a way to get a little bit more experience and knowledge and insight. And as I said, that is a work in process that we will be evolving as we go forward.
Excellent. Well, Nat, I want to thank you for sharing your time and insights on the process of executing an effective executive selection process. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed The Right Leader, but I think it's important to highlight for our listeners that, you know, we've just barely had time to scratch the surface, because there is so much more with respect to actual step-by-step methodologies to be employed. You have discussions about culture maps and their development, leader assessment instruments, and of course, I really appreciated the content of that you discuss about the field guide of vital information. Again, it provided me a lot of insight as to, wow, here's a world of things that can be done from a strategic planning perspective and add value to so many other areas of the organization. So again, I wanted to thank you for sharing your insights and all the learnings that you've gained as being an executive and CEO over the years with us today. And I would encourage our listeners to go pick up a copy of The Right Leader to benefit from it themselves, as I've benefited from it. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Nathan, for having me. This has been a real treat.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Nat Stoddard for being with us today and sharing his insights on executive selection. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Nat Stoddard and The Right Leader, selecting executives who fit,
at www.therightleader.com. Until next time, so long.